Thanks, Wayne. I second the plug for Blue Christmas there. That's it's one of my, I don't know if favorite is the right word, but most cherished, valuable rhythms that we have here. So I'll be there for sure. I know I need that space, and again, I think it's really cool that we carve out time to recognize that as a community. So, and it ties into what we'll be looking at today. But first, good morning, everyone, Liminal family. It's good to see you all here. Good morning to everyone tuning in online. Glad that you all are here in spirit with us. I think most of you all here look familiar, but for those who don't know me, my name's Andrew. I'm one of, I believe, seven members of the teaching team here, who kind of take turns being this person up here behind the pulpit, teaching every week. And I have the privilege today of sharing the last message in our Theology of Song series. No pressure. Thanks for last week, Wayne. That was incredible. So I can't promise to top that experience, but I'm excited to jump in and get ready to kind of pivot into the season of Advent. But before we do, for a number of years earlier in my faith journey, I attended a liturgical church, kind of more traditional, smells and bells, recited prayers, all that stuff. And a lot of it I really miss. And I know one thing some of us have started doing on the teaching team is starting off with a more liturgical kind of element or practice together. So I would like to start with a responsive reading of a prayer that I hope will set the table for the song that I'll be sharing this morning. This prayer is from a wonderful book. I should have brought a copy of it. This little volume called Prayers for a Planetary Pilgrim by Edward Hayes, who is a Catholic and contemporary spirituality writer. It was originally intended as a prayer for the autumn equinox to kind of mark the start of the season of autumn. As the days grow increasingly dark, we move into the darker half of the year. After daylight savings time a few weeks ago, and after all the clouds and rain we've experienced the past week, it feels exceptionally timely. So if we can move into the start of this. All right, here's how this is going to work. I'll read the words in white, and you can respond together in the bolded blue text. So this is a prayer for Autumn Equinox by Edward Hayes. I unite myself with ancient memories that sleep within. Remind me of my holy communion with that river of humanity flowing through my soul.
May this flame be my autumn sacred fire.
I greet you, child of night, my anger.
May I live with you in a
creative
way.
Be fuel for the prophet within me. I greet you, daughter of the dark, my sexual needs.
May I always
dance
with you in creative, selfless ways. May I live with you in
holiness
and without fear.
I greet you, sons of darkness, envy, and the need to be noticed. I fear you not. I greet you, night spirit of aggression.
May I live with you in
You are the energy that can impel me to achieve great deeds, to heal the earth of brokenness. And may all my friends of the dark
be in harmony
with the spirits of life and divinity, living together under the loving eye of our merciful God. Amen. Great job, guys. That was beautiful. We'll circle back to this prayer later in my teaching this morning. As again, I think it speaks to the song I've chosen in some powerful ways. But first, we of course need to experience our text for the morning. Hopefully, see most people grabbed a little half sheet copy of the lyrics. It's not mandatory, but if you need one, yes, usher can pass one of those out. We're only going to listen to it once at the beginning here, so I figured it would be helpful for you to have that as reference. Everyone got a copy of the lyrics. Good to go. So the reason I chose this particular song for today was very much a gut-level decision for me. I think it came from this place of intuition. I was thinking about a couple different songs of what I could do, what I wanted to do. But there was something about this one, the fruitful darkness, that I couldn't quite shake or let go of. Something about it kind of got stuck in my craw. And I think the main reason I felt that way is that, like good poetry or even much of scripture, I found that I feel like I can't really like fully explain or get a good handle on it. And yet I've found it to hold this wisdom that's deeply compelling to me and somehow I think rings true. It's also turned out, I think, to be pretty providential timing, as I hope this song, The Fruitful Darkness, as we get into it, will serve as a nice bridge or transition from our Theology of Song series into the dark season of Advent, which will revolve around the theme, Do Not Be Afraid, and that's a kind of a motif that shows up in the song. So this song is called The Fruitful Darkness by the artist Trevor Hall. It's not a long song. It's about 4 minutes, so not in for a 10-minute epic like last week. But even though it's a quote-unquote normal length, it does still take the listener on a journey. And this journey, as you'll see, has two parts or movements to it. So what I'd like to do is first listen to the song. We'll take this journey into the fruitful darkness with Trevor Hall, and then I'll take some time to try to excavate some of the gems of wisdom and insight within it. All right. Find my way through.
sound, crystal clear.
Before I say anything else, I'd like to just pause for a moment and invite you to reflect on how do you feel right now? Where are you at? What's coming up in your body after listening to that? I know for myself and a lot of feedback reflections I've heard on this song reflects this sense of there's a peace and a serenity and comfort that's captured much more in the instrumentation and I think through Trevor Hall's rough yet kind of warm and fatherly voice. More so that than through the lyrics, right? Which I think describe an experience, like to go through the darkness can be deeply challenging and painful and terrifying, whatever form it takes. And so if you receive nothing else this morning, just let it be that chance to listen to it, to sit with that together. These words, this music offered in kindness and love to you right now, this morning. Now for the hard part. There's a part of me that just wants to drop the mic here and call it a morning, because I feel like standing up here as a teacher talking about this is a little bit of a misnomer. Because if you've ever found yourself in darkness, whether it's individual, whether it's collective. The fact is, I don't really have any answers for you from this song. I can't tell you what to do. And I think that's the point, right? As Trevor Hall sings, I had to find my way through. I had to find my way through. Meaning that no one else can do that work for you. There's no roadmap. No protocol, no fixed answers, per se, when you find yourself in the darkness. And this takes us into what I'm going to call movement one of this song, I Had to Find My Way Through. And this, I think, reflects a piece of wisdom that oftentimes well-meaning Christians will miss. A lot of us with Christian backgrounds perhaps have been taught that the Bible is, we have this like reference book, right? A manual for human behavior, moral precepts, guidance, etc., that has everything we need for life and godliness, right? But I don't think that's true, at least not true in the way we're often conditioned to believe in sort of the modern Western world and Western church. We're prescribed, many of you perhaps have been prescribed biblical ways to do things, these black and white solutions for this or that situation or challenge or difficulty. And yet, for those of us who have honestly experienced genuine darkness, whether it's a crisis of faith or a grief, a loss of a relationship or a loved one, in these experiences, we come to discover deep down at a soul level that many of the truisms and assumptions that we've been fed are woefully inadequate. One of my favorite examples, good example, I think, of this, what it looks like to wrestle in the fruitful darkness, was from the early days of COVID, which is a season of fruitful darkness, if there ever was one. If you can remember, think back to those first weeks, those first months of the lockdowns and everything descending. But in March of 2020, so right as soon as the pandemic hit, one of the most memorable and humble articles I ran across was this piece in Time magazine by the scholar and theologian N.T. Wright. And the title of this article, a national magazine, from a theologian was, "Christianity offers no answers about the coronavirus." It's not supposed to. Like, sit with that for a moment. Like, this was coming from the former Bishop of Durham in the Church of England, a senior research fellow at the Wycliffe Hall in Oxford. Like, this guy, N.T. Wright, some of you may be familiar with some of his work. He's a really smart dude. He's one of those people you would think you could look to for theological answers, and yet he had the humility, some might say the audacity, to write an article saying, yeah, actually, Christianity doesn't have answers to this right now. I don't know. So here's an excerpt, something he says in this article I think is helpful for us. "No doubt the usual silly suspects will tell us why God is doing this to us. A punishment, a warning, a sign. These are knee-jerk, would-be Christian reactions in a culture which, generations back, embraced rationalism. Everything must have an explanation. But supposing it doesn't. Supposing real human wisdom doesn't mean being able to string together some dodgy speculations and say, so that's all right then. What if, after all, there are moments when the only advice is to wait without hope? Because we'd be hoping for the wrong thing." Now, what Wright is describing here, I think especially at the end, is this experience of being in the darkness that Trevor Hall is singing about. It's allowing yourself, even as a person of faith, like Christians aren't at all exempt from this, of being in a place of not knowing, of not being able to see or know for sure what the next step is, of not having any sort of explanation or answer for what is happening or why it's happening. Darkness, these big, to use the language of the song, these mountains in our way. What do we do in these moments? What can we do? Well, we have to let the darkness do its work. We have to, as Trevor Hall sings, let it come into bloom. Or as N.T. Wright puts it here, we must wait without hope. Now this phrase, wait without hope, is a reference to a poem by T.S. Eliot called East Coker. Maybe some of you have heard it. It's the second of Eliot's four quartets, which was originally published in Great Britain in 1940, which, if you know your history, that was a time of collective darkness and uncertainty, if there ever was one. And I remember discovering this poem through Wright's article, and it quickly became a sort of touchstone for me for enduring the darkness that I returned to over and over again during that first year of COVID, that time of collective uncertainty and not knowing. And so I'm going to take a few parts of this poem and kind of put them in conversation with Trevor Hall here and see what they illuminate. The whole poem is really long. If you like poetry, I would encourage you to check it out. If you don't, maybe just stick with the excerpts I have, because T.S. Eliot he's very dense and difficult to parse out sometimes, but it's an incredible piece. But I want to share just a few excerpts today, and here's the first one from East Coker. I said to my soul, be still and let the dark come upon you, which shall be the darkness of God. As in a theater, the lights are extinguished, for the scene to be changed with a hollow rumble of wings, with a movement of darkness on darkness. And we know that the hills and the trees, the distant panorama, and the bold imposing facade are all being rolled away. That phrase, darkness of God, is really something, isn't it? This notion that darkness can bear fruit, that it can be a place of growth and bloom, I think is really quite radical. And one reason I, again, like this song so much is that I think it actually deconstructs a lot of the sort of either-or, black-and-white programming that we get in church around this. At least that was my experience growing up in a quote-unquote Bible-believing home. We have all these biblical texts to support this idea of walking in the light and not the darkness, right? We're taught to stay away from the darkness, to avoid it at all cost. And if we understand darkness kind of narrowly in a moral sense, like as something that deceives, harms relationships, and so on, that's a fair concern to have. But the darkness that is of God, or at least infused with God's presence in some mysterious sense, is there room in our spirituality for that? I remember during one of my, what I would call a season of fruitful darkness, I was going through a divorce. And on the phone with my mother and telling her in the midst of my pain and heartbreak that I just felt like falling apart. And immediately my mom exclaimed, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. Now, my mom is a wonderful, kind, and generous person. I love her. Her intentions were good. But in this moment, that was not what I needed to hear, and it wasn't what I needed to do. I didn't need to keep it together, just the opposite, actually. I needed to let the darkness of loss and grief pull me apart, because as it did, things started to grow inside me. Through being broken open, I started the process of ultimately becoming more whole, more fully myself. Here's some more a little bit later in that poem from T.S. Eliot, his thoughts about enduring the darkness. How do we sit in that? How do we walk through that? He says, I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. There's that line. For hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love and the hope are all in the waiting. Wait without thought, for you are not ready for thought. So the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing. The darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing. This brings us to part two, the second movement of this song, where Trevor Hall sings in this sort of echoing refrain, "The dark within my dark is where I found my light. The fruit became the doorway, and now it's open wide. The dark within my dark is where I found my light." Okay, what the heck does that mean? I don't know. Again, I don't know. I know I'm standing up here as a teacher, but at the end of the day, it's not my place to say, right? I think ultimately this is one of those paradoxes that really has to be lived through and experienced for yourself, experienced spiritually, emotionally, even somatically, bodily in some sense, before you can really know and discover the truth of it. And this wisdom, like, if and when you get to this point of finding light within the darkness, darkest of the dark places in our lives, is hard won for any of you who can relate to this. It comes at a cost. The theologian and writer Belden Lane, in his book, The Solace of Fierce Landscapes, recounts the experience of losing his mother in a drawn-out battle to cancer, and working through his grief in this season by literally going into the wilderness, to these fierce landscapes, going out into the desert, the mountains, experiencing the cold, indifferent solitude of nature. And in recounting this story, one thing he reflects is that he says, you can go to the next slide here, he says, "Certain truths can be learned, it seemed, only as one is sufficiently emptied, frightened, or confused." Certain truths can be learned only as one is sufficiently emptied, frightened, or confused. I wish I had a more pleasant message for you. I really do. But I do think there's a comfort to be found here, right? Just naming that, and it's wrapped up in the title of the song. When the darkness afflicts us as emptiness, as fear, as confusion, fruit comes out of it, right? There's an opening there for these seeds of light to bloom. Belden Lane goes on later in the book. You can go to the next slide. He makes this really wild statement about his own grief journey. As he was losing his mother, he writes, "The opportunity for prolonged grief was somehow good, inviting me to the letting go of other things in my life. A keen sense of immediacy, a vulnerability that sharpened life's intensity, a capacity to discern what was and wasn't important. All these were occasioned by the proximity of death. I wondered at times if I could begin living always as if someone dear to me were dying." I hesitated to share this initially, because it almost sounds like masochism, like very, I don't know, borderline, but I don't think it is. The darkness of loss, the darkness of grief does have a way of clarifying what really actually matters in life. Those of you who have lost a loved one and had the, I'm going to say, gift of being with them in their final days or hours know how true this is. You get in touch with what really matters in the moment. Love, honesty, connection. And frankly, you don't give a damn about all the other stuff we tend to fret over and preoccupy ourselves with. And so there's this heightened sense of awareness and presence that can come out of the darkness. That's one of the fruits. So that's one form of darkness that I've mainly been talking about so far, loss and grief. But I do want to address what I think is potentially another facet of this song here, and that's when darkness takes other forms. Maybe it could be addiction, loneliness, depression, selfishness, kind of wrestling with our vices, our inner demons, as it were. Are there any fruits that can be found here, even in these things? I think that autumn equinox prayer that we opened with offers a few possibilities. So I want to go back through and kind of review this together. So first off, it speaks of the memories of our ancestors that sleep within us and their fears that have left their fingerprints on us. In modern parlance, we might call this generational trauma, the wounds and hurts that we inherit from our parents and their parents and so on. But being able to name these wounds, address them, creates the possibility of intergenerational healing, of breaking that cycle of trauma. And then there's anger, scary one for me as a Enneagram 9. If you know, you know. If you don't worry about it. But anger can be fuel for creativity, for speaking prophetically against injustice. There's our sexual desires, which as a man, as someone who grew up in purity culture, I don't have time to get into that whole part of my journey, but as someone who's had to work through a lot of shame and distrust around my own sexuality, and as someone who's aware of the darkness that it can and has led me into, to affirm one's sexual needs as an opening for creativity and expression of the divine spirit that wants to bring forth life and beauty and pleasure, there's fruit to be found there. Next, another vice. We have envy, the need to be noticed. And I love Edward Hayes' reframing here of these vices as things that can teach us, can be these starting points, these clues as to how we can love ourselves and thereby love God and our neighbors better. And finally, there's the night spirit of aggression, which I read as capturing our embodiment and our capacity for physical acts of violence. And this too, I think, is a signifier of a fundamentally good life force within us, something that drives us out into the world to fight for the healing and restoration of the earth. We often think of these things as vices, wrath, lust, envy, and so on. We think of them as dragons to be slain, inner demons to be conquered. But could it be, I wonder, if we put this into this paradigm of fruitful darkness, could it be that these emotions, these are things to befriend, dragons to tame, as it were, energy sources of profound goodness, beauty, and love? Again, I don't have the answers for your darkness, whatever you might be finding yourself in, bringing with you today. But I'm simply inviting us to see if we can broaden our aperture, so to speak. Maybe let a little more light in. Going from dragon slaying to dragon taming isn't some sort of quick fix. Can't just flip a switch. You might need some therapy, among other things. But I do hope that if and when any of these forms of darkness find you, or when they appear to be rising up from within you, that if nothing else, you won't be so quick to condemn yourself or to try to suppress those dark parts of yourself. My hunch, which I think Trevor Hall is expressing here, is that if you go deeper into your own darkness, within it you just might find light. You just might find the Christ, the image of God, deep down underneath all of it. That's what wants to come through. Here's how T.S. Eliot ends his poem, East Coker. We're going to go back to Eliot one more time. He writes, "We must be still and still moving into another intensity for a further union, a deeper communion. Through the dark cold and the empty desolation, the wave cry, the wind cry, the vast waters of the petrel and the porpoise. In my end is my beginning. In my end is my beginning. Put another way, in my death is my life." And if I can finally make this teaching today sound more like a sermon, this is the pattern that Jesus lives out, right? Well, always bring it back to Jesus. This is the pattern, the journey that Jesus lived out and invites us to follow him through. "If anyone would come after me, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever would save their life would lose it, but whoever loses their life for my sake will find it." This is ultimately how the dark within our dark can be the place where we find our light. When you've died before you die, so to speak, and I think, by the way, that self-denial, this taking up of one's cross that Jesus has in mind here, can look a lot of different ways, right, for each of us. Again, we each have to find our way through that. But I think in almost every case, it feels like darkness. That's the experience of it. Maybe it begins with hitting rock bottom, suffering loss, having something you thought was real or true fail you. Maybe it's a humiliation or a setback where your ego comes undone. Whatever it is, when you go through this darkness, this death, and then find yourself still here, and not just here, but actually alive and even more fully yourself than ever before, that's where the light is found. And that's where the fruit of darkness becomes the open doorway to life. Through the dark cold and the empty desolation, in my end is my beginning, the fruitful darkness. I'd like to conclude with one last poem. This is a short one, don't worry. This is from Wendell Berry, and I think maybe next week Jenny is going to be incorporating this into the contemplative service, so I don't want to offer too much commentary on it, but think of it as a little teaser for next week and as a benediction of sorts to usher you into this season of Advent. The other reason I'm not going to comment on this poem is because I really can't put into words what I think it's talking about. I've revisited it a handful of times over the past several years, and again, it's one of those things. Something about it rings true. I think there's wisdom in it, but I'm at a loss as to explain why. I don't know how to articulate it. There's a depth, there's a mystery to it that still eludes me. But that's the experience of darkness, right? We don't get to know. And as Trevor Hall so gently reminds us, we have to find our way through. So these are my last words for you. This is called To Know the Dark by Wendell Berry. To go in the dark with the light is to know the light. To know the dark, go dark. Go without sight. And find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. Band can come up. Let's pray. God of the darkness, I confess that I still do not fully understand the depths of this song, these poems I've shared today, but I do believe they offer us much needed wisdom in this moment of the year, in this moment of our history, at this point in our journeys of faith. God, will you give us ears to hear and eyes to see the fruit of darkness? For those of us who find ourselves in the dark today, and for those of us with dark days ahead, I ask boldly and dangerously that you would forbid us exits out of darkness that are too easy. May we wait fruitfully until we are at last interrupted by your life-giving grace. Amen.